This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Sean Doolittle at 1 o'clock today. He's got a lot of takes on the Houston Astros. Sign stealing with technology. We'll ask him about those in 55 minutes. Longtime former executive and former GM Michael Lombardi, who's always fire. He likes Bruce Allen about as much as you and I do. He thinks about the same of Bruce's resume as the Grant and Danny radio program, which always makes him a good guest. Right now, it is time for the Beltway Blitz. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter. Craig, what do you know about the Monte Nicholson story? Update us on what we've heard.
Last night, the latest is what we have as of last night. You know, it's obviously a tragic situation in which a 21-year-old woman died. She was pronounced dead at the emergency room where she was brought to by two men who have been identified, one of whom is Monte Nicholson, by the Washington Post and TMZ Sports. Flagg County Sheriff has not verified that at this time. Obviously, it's a terrible situation that started the night started with Monte and some associates going out to dinner, one of whom was this woman. We don't know how they're connected, if at all, whether it was one of his friends, a friend of a friend, whoever. And she at some point was found in the bathroom unresponsive, brought to the ER, and pronounced dead there.
Craig, there's a lot we don't know, and we should, of course, wait for as much information to come out as possible before passing judgment. I think that goes kind of without saying here. The fact that Monte Nicholson is, I guess, alleged to be involved, though, I think it begs the question for us on our little sports show here. He was kind of on, I don't say thin ice, but, you know, he needed to probably get right after what happened last year at One Loudoun. He'd kind of run afoul of the team, someone that they once thought very, very highly of. How was that going before whatever this is that may have occurred, right? I mean, how was his get right sort of season?
Yeah, no, that's I think that's a fair question. Phrase that way, Danny. I think it was going really well. You know, Monte went through a lot, and we chronicled some of that, but certainly not all of it in the interview that he and I did in training camp that a lot of people were kind of blown away by it, his maturity and kind of how he reacted to everything. And I think he was really well liked. I know Landon has absolutely loved getting to know Monte and playing with him and just being around him. He's a guy that's got a lot of energy, and it really seemed to come out of a funk that last year he was in from in a mental health space, a very real, you know, problem that went beyond football, where some of the post-concussion stuff was really bothering him. And I honestly still don't really understand how he was playing football last year with some of the things he was going through. But, you know, this year has been completely different. He's been back to basically the happy-go-lucky kid he was as a rookie. I think he was generally well-liked, and this is obviously a terrible situation, which we don't know his full involvement in yet. But I don't think that anybody would have seen anything like this coming, or his involvement in anything like this, based off of how this year was going.
As far as this weekend's game, which seems trivial when we're talking about this against the Jets, how should we expect Darius Geist to be used? How much involvement for him in his return?
So I think he gets some of the first and second down snaps, and then he is going to be their third down back, I would presume. They haven't explicitly said that, but just kind of reading between the lines and also understanding kind of what Darius' skill set is and how they see him. I think he essentially is Chris Thompson's replacement, on top of getting a few extra first and second down looks where he, you know, he got some of the stuff that Adrian has been taking the bulk of. So he is both Adrian's spell and a guy who is going to be involved when they go to some of the outside runs, some of the screen game, and all those kinds of things. They'll use him obviously more than Wendell Smallwood, because he's Darius Geist and not Wendell Smallwood. But a lot of that stuff that Smallwood's been getting will become all Geist plus a little bit extra.
So do we just assume that Geist is, you know, going to be the lead back next year? I've never been that high on him. I know I'm in the minority on that. But I guess if he can't get through healthy, that's one thing. But are we just sort of assuming that he at some point is going to be really good?
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm someone who thinks Darius, when healthy, is going to be a top flight back in this league. It's just I don't have the faith necessarily that he's going to stay healthy, and it's in part for the same reason. He's so physical as a runner, and he's so violent, and everything just seems like it's on the border of out of control, even though, you know, from like a mental standpoint, he's actually really, really a smart football player and understands all this stuff. It's just his body is everywhere at once, it seems like, and so yeah, I think the presumption is when you use a second-round pick on a guy, he's going to be pretty good, and I think that's a fair thing to presume. The question is, so far has obviously been helped, and that question so far has been answered with he can't stay healthy.
Craig, thank you. Much appreciated.
Got to see you guys.
See you, buddy.
That's the Skins. Let's talk puck. Rob Carlin, NBC Sports Washington.com, pre and post tonight. Another game for the Caps means another chance for 2 points. They've got 30 on the year out of a possible 38, having played now 19 games. Rob, what a stretch for the Capitals. This is the best start they've ever been off to. All but 8 of their points, and I guess it's 32 out of 40 at this point. Who do we give credit to? Is this coaching? Is this Brian McClellan putting together a roster? Or the players themselves?
I think it's D, all of the above. I mean, I think they've got a great roster. I think that Brian McClellan was he wanted particular players that filled particular roles. You know, so far the only one that really hasn't hit is Richard Ponick, and he's been injured. But other than that, everyone they've brought in for a couple of years now seems to find their role, accept their role, and then excel at their role. And then, you know, the rest of it is a bunch of Hall of Famers or, you know, guys who are going to go down as some of the best in their generation. So, you know, it's a really good roster. I think the coaching and the adapting to the way the game is being played now and maximizing even Ovi and Backstrom and Carlson, the guys that didn't necessarily need to be coached a new way, but they are all bought in. And I think right now it's just and the crazy thing is they really haven't played too many great games. Like they adjust, they adapt, they keep finding ways to win or at least get points, but they really haven't strung together 3 or 4 games where you're like, wow, they're just dominating teams. So if they can get to that point, then you start thinking like, man, how good can this team be this year?
Uncle Rob, the win the other night against Philadelphia, I thought it was actually really important. And here, hear me out on this. See, I want to see if you agree. Number one, I just love beating Philadelphia so much and anything. That's always fun. But number two, I
agree with that.
We've seen them win 5-4 games where they're ripping off this stretch, scoring 5-6 goals a night or going to overtime winning in shootouts. I thought it was important they could win a low-scoring game too. Like, they could win the pitcher's duel also. It was important for Holtby. It was important for their defense, for the team, just kind of the way the game went. I think that kind of win is just as important as any kind of, you know, 4-3 win over the Maple Leafs. I like that they can win a low-scoring affair, too, because that felt playoff-y to me.
Totally agree with that. And there have been a number of people on Twitter who have reached out and said, I'm a little concerned because what happens when the games do get, you know, more physical and there's less space and the goals aren't going to come in bunches like this? How are they going to be able to win? Well, you saw a pretty good result the other night against a team that's been improving over the last 3 or 4 weeks on the road. And again, that's another great example of just finding a way and knowing or expecting someone's going to step up and make a big play in a big moment. And that's been right now the identity of this team is the adjustments and the adapting, not on a night to night, on a period-to-period basis. And that's really where you're seeing it, is that in games where, hey, this isn't working or this team is exploiting this, we got to fix that now and get better at it before the game ends. You saw that against Arizona. And again, call it a loser point. Say you left with a little empty feeling. Say it was a little embarrassing being down to a team like Arizona 3-0, which, by the way, they beat the last 2 Stanley Cup champions back-to-back nights on the road. So it's a pretty good team, but they still got a point out of it. And all those points matter later in the season. But I agree, to gut out a win on the road in a fairly boring game where not much was given as far as offensive opportunities, I thought that was a big result.
Rob, thank you so much. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll watch you on NBC Sports Washington.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Before you can see good-looking Rob Carlin, you can see my portly self, pre tonight, starting at 6 on NBCSW. Sean Doolittle at 1. How'd you overcome the Astros trying to steal your signs with video? Michael Lombardi at 130, spinning around the NFL. Speaking of the National Football League, suspension is out. Myles Garrett indefinitely. What does that mean? We'll get into it next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Sean Doolittle's on the show at 1, and Michael Lombardi stops by at 1.30. Our pal Nate Ewald from Barstool Sports, started here at The Fan many years ago, is in town and swung by. He's going to hang out with us coming up in a few right here on G&D as well. Danny, Myles Garrett's suspension came down, so let's navigate away what we would have been talking about to the breaking news right now of the moment and kind of throw out the rundown for a second. Read you the statement first from the National Football League. The Steelers and the Browns organizations have each been fined $250,000, and three players, Myles Garrett, Larry Ogunjobi, and Marquise Pouncey, have been suspended without pay for their actions in Thursday night's game. Garrett's been suspended without pay indefinitely for a minimum of the remainder of the regular season and postseason. So he is done for the rest of this year. If the Browns make the playoffs, even if they went on an unlikely magical run to the Super Bowl, he won't get to play in any of those games. But by saying indefinitely, he then has to visit with the league before next season to be reinstated. That's the difference between saying the rest of the year and indefinitely. So I'll just keep reading here. He has to meet with the commissioner's office, Roger Goodell, prior to the decision on his reinstatement. He was also fined an additional amount. Garrett violated unnecessary roughness and unsportsmanlike conduct rules, as well as fighting, removing the helmet of an opponent, and using the helmet as a weapon. Marquise Pouncey has been suspended without pay for three games and fined an additional amount for fighting. Ogunjobi suspended without pay for one game, fined an additional amount, unnecessary roughness. I'm shocked that Pouncey got three games.
It's more than I thought. I thought it would be a couple because of the kicking. Just the look of that, how that played out, regardless of, because you and I both try to work back, not from a result, but via process. You land some of those kicks. That's pretty damaging. That's more significant than the pushing and shoving and, you know, sort of grabbing somebody's face mask and doing the normal things that in a fracas might generally happen. That was intent to injure. And I see why they went as serious as they did. It surprised me, though. I would have thought 1 to 2 games for Pouncey. Trying to send a message, though.
Three games. Man, that seems aggressive.
Three's a lot.
And if he gets three and Garrett only gets six, to me, that's egregious. Meaning, the Browns aren't going to make the playoffs probably anyway. He's suspended for the rest of the year with this indefinite term being used because he has to be reinstated. But if he meets with Goodell this offseason and he's reinstated without anything next year, Pouncey got half of the suspension of Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I would have had a 6-to-1 ratio. So I would have said 6 for Garrett, 1 for Pouncey.
What I would have done,
right?
If you're doing 6 for Garrett, and I'm working back from that, if you're going 2 for Pouncey, I'm going at least 10 probably for Myles Garrett.
Because the record is perfect with 12 for an incident like that.
By the way, I still think, and perfect, just to finish that point real quick, that was a lifetime achievement award.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't the play itself. People can look at that and they'll go, this isn't as bad as what happened against the Browns Steelers the other night. This is not nearly as bad as what Myles Garrett did. No. That was for 36 transgressions over many, many years.
This is your 10th one, so yeah.
Myles Garrett, indefinite. I wish they came out with a number. I don't like how the NFL does this. I wish this was more black and white like all these other sports do. The NHL's perfect with this. And that's not to say I agree with all their suspensions. Tom Wilson got a 20-game suspension that was ridiculous a couple years ago.
And after the fact, it was reduced to what?
It was rescinded to 14 games.
After he'd already served?
After he'd served 16. And all that meant is he got money back for 2 games, but he'd already served 16. The team was without him for 2 games he, quote-unquote, didn't have a suspension for. Thanks a lot for nothing. But at least they give you a hard number of games immediately. And they don't need to do that right now, this second, today. They could have the hearing first, Department of Player Safety style, like they do in the NHL.
Uh-huh.
Takes a day, sometimes 2, sometimes 3 days. Eventually you get word as to what the suspension's going to be. They could have met with all the parties. They could have had Mason Rudolph on a call, Myles Garrett on a call. They could have flown and met with him at the facility if they wanted to, have a heart-to-heart meeting in person. I just hate when you hide behind the indefinitely. I think sometimes what they do is they wait and see how much do people calm down, how much of the story goes away.
Right.
If we do it right now, we're going to get more feedback negatively and anger and vitriol. than we will if months from now when the passion's not there.
To me, it's the Ray Rice corollary. They got it wrong with that and are now scared. They're basically going, what do you guys think it should be? We're very serious about this. Let's figure out what public perception is.
So here's my question for you. Here's my question for the callers. We can open up the phones at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. The NFL hands down a suspension for Myles Garrett. Indefinite is the term they're using. A minimum of the remainder of this season as long as the year goes for the Browns. That includes the playoffs. But could be longer. Should it be longer, or do you think that the remainder of this season is adequate and ample? And if they don't make the playoffs, as opposed to if they were going to, would it change anything for you? Because I don't care at all if they make the playoffs. No playoffs, six games, and you make it and you go 2 or 3, I'm not then going to give you less next year, as an example, a fewer overall game suspension. Like, if I was doing this, I would give you the number up front. Let's say it's 10 games. Whenever you serve a 10 games, not including
then
the preseason, you're done. But what I won't do is this indefinite thing. Well, he did have to serve a playoff game, or he did have to serve two playoff games, so that must have been painful. So we won't suspend him in September now at the start of the season. We're going to reinsert you. No. To me, either upfront number of games or indefinite, it doesn't matter if he made the playoffs or not. Next year has nothing to do with that.
So the way I would do it to kind of compromise is say your 2019 season, whatever that brings, is over. That's how I do it. So that's if the Browns don't make the playoff at six games. If they do somehow without Myles Garrett, I don't think it's likely, but let's say they do, you don't have him for the playoffs either. You are without Myles Garrett for the remainder of your 2019 season is how I would have framed it. Would that have satisfied you? Even though it's not as concrete a number of games, it's six plus whatever games you guys might earn, you still don't have him. I'm going, Myles Garrett does not play in the NFL in 2019/2020 for this as the season carries over to the new year. He does not play again this year. His year is done.
800-636-1067 is the number. I like that he's suspended the rest of the season. I think you had to send that message. I am really surprised Pouncey got three games. I know he punched. I know he kicked. He didn't do anything I haven't seen done before, which is the big difference between him and Myles Garrett. And what he did was so reactionary. He wasn't defending himself. He wasn't involved at all. He piled on. It was a melee. He made it way worse. I think he should be suspended. I said a game, worst case two. I think that would have been a little bit aggressive, but I could have gotten behind it and been talked into it. Three games for Pouncey when Garrett may well end up serving six? And then you've got Larry Ogunjobi, who has been suspended without pay for one game, fined an additional amount for unnecessary roughness. He shoved Mason Rudolph with his helmet off, knocking him to the ground during all of this madness. I saw a really scalding take from Lewis Riddick today, where Lewis Riddick said he thinks what Ogunjobi did was more cowardly or ridiculous, I guess, in some way, than what Myles Garrett did, which I don't agree with at all. I don't have a huge problem with a game for Ogunjobi. I probably would have gone zero. Pouncey, instead of three, I would have done one. Garrett, I would have just said outright, either rest of this season, 8 or 10, whatever it is, going into next year. 800-636-1067 is the number. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Myles Garrett suspended indefinitely by the NFL. The Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to the Fan. Last night's game was pretty good. Browns got a win they needed. Baker Mayfield looked better. Two touchdowns, no picks. Nick Chubb ran for 92. Freddie Kitchens had some answers for once. But nobody's talking about that because of what Myles Garrett did, and he is now out for the remainder of the year with a suspension. Could go beyond that. We're joined in studio by our buddy Barstool Nate.
Wow, nailed it.
You know him as Eric Nathan? So, real quick.
You don't know him as that, though.
I do. So, really quickly. So, last segment, I said, our buddy Barstool Nate is here, but I wanted to give like a formal kind of introduction so people could like say, he's coming on the show. So I said, he's in studio. Oh, he'll be in studio with us. And I said, Nate Ewalt. Well, your name is not Nate, really.
No.
And Ewalt, I don't know where I got that.
Is a fake last name that you made up.
Right. So your actual name is Eric Nathan, but I always refer to you as Barstool Nate, and you're in my phone as Barstool Nate. So when I brought you on the show, right now I drilled it.
Yes.
Perfect.
That was good.
Just nothing but net. Beautiful. But when I referenced it in passing, I always have to, for a second, go, what is his real name? And then, for some reason, the first thing that came to my head.
There's a translation that goes on.
Was Nate Ewell. Now, as terrible as this sounds.
That's not a real person.
I don't think it is.
Yeah.
Let's Google
this
Nate.
Is not like some stranger I've never met. This is what's embarrassing for me. We text during games all the time. I would consider us friendly over the last couple of years.
I would
pals.
Agree. Yeah.
And I said your name wrong. And then if you quizzed me right after, like, you said my name wrong, I would have said, no, I said Nate Ewell.
Well, this guy, Nate Ewald, has a nice career. I'll show you guys his LinkedIn
page. He's like
a
financial
planner.
Or
he does very well for himself.
Who's Nate Ewald?
Well, we determined that you combine multiple people over the course of its past
but,
our
but
lives.
But people that have nothing to do with him.
They have nothing to do with Eric Nathan or Barstool Nate, if you will. Kevin Ewald used to be one of the guys that ran Hogs Haven. Super nice guy.
Not relevant.
But not necessarily relevant to this conversation.
Right.
But the only reason he came up is because he shares the name Ewald with
okay,
the fictional
but,
person you
but
made
here's
up.
What I'm not able to connect the dots on right now.
Oh, you uh-huh. think I run Hogs Haven because I also write Redskins blogs on
you
the
write
internet.
Blogs?
Right. You have written blogs about the Redskins
there
on the internet.
There we go. Okay.
No. So, but I understand what you're saying, like where the Ewald came from.
We're just guessing. But, we're putting pieces together here.
But that would be like if he went by Barstool Kevin and his last name was Kevin, it would make more sense if I called him like Kevin Ewald. To just add Ewald to Nathan, or Nate in this case, it makes no sense to me.
You were like the real life Nick Young gif when you hit the shot and you turned around all cocky. You thought you nailed my name so perfectly.
This is the last thing I'll say about this because I know people don't care and they want to get to the conversation. But I'll say this. He texts me during the segment, last segment. Mm-hmm. He sends me a picture of a guy who I used to be real close with, who's been out of the market for 10 years, named Nate Ewell. And Nate Ewell was the Capitals PR guy.
Yes.
Nate Ewell
did a great job.
He went and he took a job at Michigan State doing hockey. I have no idea what he's doing now. Nice, nice man. If you know Nate Ewell, you know he's a mensch. Barstool Nate sent me a picture of his bio, and I went, what the hell is he sending
is
me this
for?
So I'm going, did I actually call? This is my own thinking a minute ago. I go, did I call him Nate Ewell? No, I definitely called him Nate Ewell. I was like, I definitely called him
which
the right
is
name.
Way better.
No, but in my mind, I'm going, I definitely called him Nate Ewell. I definitely got his name right. Wait, no. His name's Eric Nathan.
Because everyone's done that before. Like, if I've just finished talking to Brendan and I go see Blue Shorts, I accidentally called him Brendan for 2 seconds. And then,
yeah.
And so if you were actually thinking about, you know, Nate Ewell and you dropped Nate Ewell on Barstool Nate, very explainable.
I'd love to blame it on that. That's not what happened.
Nate Ewald has nothing to do with anything.
I apologize, number one. Number two, I would like it known. I'm not going to pit any of this on you. But because,
okay, good. You won't victim blame. That's good.
Because
did I have it coming, Grant?
A little bit, kind of. Because
Nate Rudolph
you go
here.
By Barstool Nate, your name is not out there very much.
Okay.
So
you know it, though.
I do know it. Yes, that's true. I do know it. But I always have to think about it for a second. How I got where I got, I don't know.
All right,
so
Steve.
That's where we are. Yeah, I'd be Steve for the second. That's fine. Real quick, your thoughts on the suspension indefinitely now for Myles Garrett after yesterday.
I think it's a huge Goodell move. He's going to just, like, let tempers, you know, die down a bit and then, you know, just take the public's opinion on it. Like, he'll probably have people scouring the internet trying to figure out how long the people think he should be suspended for because he needs to get back in the good graces of the NFL fans. And I think this is his way of sending a message being like, hey, I listen to the fans, you know, in his own weird brain.
Interesting.
It's the perfect blend of being able to look tough on it when you go,
right, exactly.
Definitely. We take this seriously. And then ear to the grindstone about what the most prominent media members are saying, kind of speaking for the people.
I think he really hopes and knows this will die down completely. There's so much anger and outrage and vitriol right now.
Last night.
This offseason, they come back to have this hearing whenever it is. No one's going to care as much. He'll be able to put him right back in week one. I think that's his hope.
We saw two wide receivers get knocked out with headshots from concussions last night, and then people were losing their mind over this. And I was like, yeah, football's violent. Like, what sport have you guys been watching this whole time? People were so mad. And obviously, it's because we've never seen it before. But people were kind of mad at me for this take was like, yeah, football's super violent. It's the largest people in the world running full speed at each other. Tempers are going to flare up. People in office jobs getting shoving matches at work, Now imagine that times a million on a football field.
That's true.
I'm shocked this hasn't happened before. So I think the outrage comes from the fact that we just haven't seen it before, and it was like kind of chilling to see. But I never really thought it was like out of the realm of possibility that someone would just go bananas on the football field. And we've seen it with like Andre Johnson fighting Cortland Finnegan and Albert Haynesworth, obviously. There was the time where the player on the Bears in preseason was an inch away from smashing, I think, Incognito over the head with his helmet. So it's happened. It's not wild that it happened. And people last night were acting like this was like the most egregious thing they've ever seen in their entire life.
Yeah, well, if you're watching football, I'll just speak for myself. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in watching football, by far. A guy taking a dude's helmet off after the play and bashing him over the head with it. Never seen it. There have been some things, as you said, that have been pretty gruesome, pretty grotesque. It is exceptionally violent, and you guys have both made this point now today, and I think it's right. Danny, you said this. It's amazing things like this don't happen more because these dudes program themselves. I always call them the modern-day gladiator.
Yes.
They're crazy people on the field. You ever talk to or meet with a player in the locker room after the game? They're just normal guys, right? You've hung out with some of these people. They're just Ryan Kerrick. It's just a good dude hanging out at Matchbox. But on the field, he can get into it with anybody in front of him. You turn that up to 11 last night, and these types of things probably could happen again. But I think what you have to do, it's the same thing we were talking about with the Astros, and Sean Doolittle's going to be on at 1 in 20 minutes to discuss all of the sign stealing in the videos. You've got to make it so bad and so worrisome and prohibitive that if you do it, you're so screwed that no one ever does it again. And that's where I'm saying I don't want to go 16 games or anything crazy, but 8 to 10 games into next year. You need to make sure that people know I cannot ever do what he just
Here's the thing is this is the same league that lets Greg Hardy in 10 times. This is the same league that lets Vontaze Burfict back into the league every single time. It's like there's a pattern in the NFL of players who go out of their way to try to hurt people, and now just... I mean, I get it. He took off the guy's helmet and hit him with it. I'm not defending that. It's terrible. It shouldn't happen. But the NFL, people are like, oh, this would normalize violence if the league doesn't come down on him. Like, it's been normalized, buddy. Like, league.
There's a difference.
I agree.
Between Vontaze Burfict, who's a dirty guy flying around going helmet to helmet.
I'd feel more comfortable playing against Myles Garrett than Vontaze Burfict 100 times out of 100.
Right. I agree with you. He's never done what Myles Garrett did last night. Well, there's a big difference between dirty hits, like even the two hits earlier in the game that are kind of blurring the lines, and a guy, I mean, he might as well have just gone and gotten a metal chair from under the ring and ran in there and started swinging it on people.
How about Baker just being like, did that just really happen? Like, he was kind of confused about it. He absorbed it like a pro, too.
I couldn't believe he stayed on his feet.
So lucky.
Didn't even fall.
Yeah, so lucky that it wasn't worse.
And you saw the tweet, Danny, too. I think we talked about this earlier. 6 pounds is what a helmet weighs.
Yeah.
5 pounds is the brick that we're all used to holding in our hands. That's what he hit him with. Could have been really, really bad.
Those things are not soft.
800-636-1067 is the number. We'll get to your calls next. The suspension, if you're just joining us, came down. It's indefinite, but they have said definitively that Myles Garrett will not play again this year or in the playoffs if the Browns make it, which is unlikely. They did get a big win last night to get within 2 games of 500 and close the gap with some wild card hopefuls. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Our buddy Barstool Nate's hanging out. We're taking your calls on the suspension of Myles Garrett, and definitely he will not play again this season. Let's go around the horn. We'll get to the calls at 800-636-1067. Do you think the suspension carries over into next year and he misses any time in 2020?
I do, just kind of given the severity of it, given the message that needs to be sent. It may not have gotten through with some of the other cheap shots or extracurricular type plays. I think this one's exceptional enough. It was on primetime TV. I do think it carries over into next year.
How many games?
I'm going to say two. Two more next season in addition
to the
six.
So a total of eight, probably, if they don't make the playoffs. And then the last one would be, if they make the playoffs, would it change at all what you think they do next year?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
Yes, it would. So let's say they get one playoff game. Maybe they get two somehow if they win an opening weekend. It'd be a wild card game in all likelihood, given where the Ravens are in the division. So I would say if they get two extra games, one whatever, it might affect that number. But because that playoff game is that much more marquee.
Yeah, I think it'll be four more total. So two playoff games or whatever, and two next year, any combination of four. But he'll definitely get more time.
So you think there's a chance he misses the first quarter of next season if they don't make the playoffs?
I think the hammer is going to come down hard. Like,
wow.
All right. And he'll, you know, you have to make an example out of him. You have to.
I'm getting a couple of tweets here, and you can hit us up at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, and at Barstool Nate. You're not at Nate Ewalt.
No, you nailed that. I was very proud of you for
that. Thank you.
At Nate Ewalt would be a great bet.
You won't like change your people. Twitter handle just for this.
You won't have me bit. On the Beltway Blitz.
I possibly will. We'll
have
see.
Have Nate Ewalt on the Beltway Blitz.
I'll definitely have Nate Ewalt. I don't know if I'll have you on, but I'll have Nate Ewalt if you want to be that character.
I'll do it.
On the Beltway Blitz. The one thing I keep seeing on Twitter, people saying that Mason Rudolph got off light. Am I crazy? I'm not suspending him for anything. He was just Phil Rivers on a Sunday. He was a crazy person running around screaming with his helmet off. I know that they were grabbing at each other's helmets. All normal football stuff for Mason Rudolph. He didn't do anything that doesn't normally happen.
Here's the thing. There, if you cut the clip exactly the right way, there is a time when Rudolph is trying to get Myles Garrett's helmet off. Like, he's
right.
trying to get his off. And so people are saying, like, well, he started it, but Garrett finished it. That's the take.
But you've seen guys take people's helmets off.
Right.
Like, I don't know, once a month in football. Was he going to hit him in the head with it? I highly doubt it.
Well, you never know, man.
I think
maybe that's what he was yelling at him on the ground. I'm going to hit you in the head with this
plan,
helmet.
My plan, if I'm able to carry it out, is to hit you in the head with your helmet. Give me a second. I don't know.
It's quite possible, I suppose. Scott's in Annapolis. Scott, how are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. So I'm a Steelers fan and season ticket holders. I'm a bit of a homer. But I thought the pouncing suspension was a bit much, and he could probably appeal that down. I do believe that six games, if they make the playoffs, plus another two, you know, that's basically 50% of a season right there. They have to set an example, though. The reason why is with the whole CTE and the concussions and whatnot, they can't let it go undone. All the other scenarios are just fictional, shoulda, coulda, woulda, who did what, where, when. You know, it's irrelevant. We saw what happened. I'm more surprised at the gentleman who did push Rudolph in his back because he basically blindsided him, a guy without a helmet on. And then you're right.
Ogunjobi about. He got a game. I don't hate that. I don't love that either. I would have given him nothing. I completely agree on Pouncey. Said this a couple times. Three games for Pouncey seems outrageous. I think what the league sees, though, is the punching of the helmet.
And the kick.
I mean, even in the NBA, like, you see fights all the time. There's nobody worse at fighting than NBA players. They never land punches.
It's a lot of hold me back, guys. Yes. A lot of hold me back.
94 feet backtracking.
Hold me back, yeah. Guys. But, I mean, and they swing, they don't land punches.
Mm-mm.
I don't know how they're so bad at punching, NBA players. It's unbelievable. But last night, he's connecting to the helmet, three punches, and then he tries to kick him in the head. Bad optic. I understand. It felt like everyone had lost control, and this is like Malice at the Palace-esque on the field. So you do something. Three games?
Maybe three is with the understanding that it'll get, you know, appealed down to two. Maybe you wanted to make sure that it was two.
That's possible.
I don't know the answer. I'm guessing.
If he gets three, Garrett needs closer to 10.
Mm-hmm.
I hate sounding like a hot taker. I just think what he did was so much worse than what Marquise Pouncey did.
What are NBA players worse at, fighting or throwing out first pitches?
That's actually a great question. I would say fighting because some have thrown decent first pitches. I've never seen anyone throw a punch
John Wall
that landed.
John Wall threw a cutter into the on deck circle. I mean, it was tough.
The last punch that landed in the NBA was Rudy Tomjanovich and Kermit Washington.
That was a big one.
That's quite a punch.
Did Charles Barkley and Shaq land a punch at one point?
Did they?
Because there was a nice. I mean, this was decades ago. Now they work together.
Who's the last NBA player that threw a good first pitch?
I don't. It doesn't exist. They can't.
Danny's
throw
working.
Baseball.
He's working YouTube on this. Find one for us. Tim in College Park, how are you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Tim.
Just wanted to give my take on the Rudolph-Garrett situation. I definitely think Myles Garrett should be suspended. But for Mason Rudolph, he was the aggressor in the whole scrum. Like, he was the one who tried to pull his helmet off.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the lineman has Garrett pulled back, Mason Rudolph then decides to bum rush him. It's like, what do you expect Garrett to do? Now, don't get me wrong. If Garrett, in the heat of the moment, thought, well, God, I do have his helmet in his hand. Maybe I don't want to swing at him and swing at him with my fist. Then I think maybe, you know,
Tim,
everybody wouldn't look at the optics. Go ahead.
Here's my question.
I'm with you, Tim.
You're not with him.
Sometimes you just have to take a guy's helmet and beat him with it. Teach a lesson.
Well, you know, you have to look at the aggressor. Like, if it's the Monte Nicholson situation.
Oh, boy.
If you look at that, it looks as if, like, Monte is completely destroying this guy because he is 100 pounds more than him, and the optics look bad. Yes, the optics look bad because Myles Garrett is 300 pounds and Mason Rudolph is 200 pounds.
I have no idea the leap you just made.
What do you mean?
Hold on. I'm gonna pull you back here, Tim, real quick.
What's the Nicholson situation?
The lily pad you just hopped to Monte Nicholson, we're not doing that. But here's what I'll ask you,
how about Aaron Hernandez, right, Tim?
So here's my question, Tim. When you say he started it, you know, back and forth they go, whatever, don't you agree that if you're yelling back and forth at someone, like at a movie theater, who like scuffed your boot or something, and you're just yelling back and forth, if they haul off and knock you out, what they did is the problem, not necessarily the back and forth yelling. Like, you're the guy that says, a guy walked by me and bumped me, I turned around and said something to him, then he punched me in the face and knocked me out, I got what was coming to me. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm saying that if I'm the aggressor and the situation has already pretty much been dissolved by the fact that you pulled my helmet, I scuffed your shoe, you scuffed my shoe, and now I'm in a position where I'm in your face and I'm trying to move forward and, I would say, attack you, but trying to be aggressive.
But he wasn't. He was laying on the ground while Myles Garrett was ripping his helmet off. Not to mention, oh, by the way, the whole thing started because Myles Garrett, with 8 seconds left, took Mason Rudolph to the ground
and wouldn't let him up.
Well, after the play.
So, but I agree with some sentiment that Rudolph didn't just sort of like calmly walk away and say, oh, well. I think he was a jackass. I don't know if that gets you suspended, though. Like, I could live with Mason Rudolph getting the game. I don't know that I would, but like if that came down today, I probably wouldn't freak out about it.
I do get what he's saying in a way, because I hate that I'm going to say this. We see it with Tom Wilson, where I'll say something like Tom Wilson is getting penalized for just being bigger than the other guy when he's hitting him. I think that's what Tim was getting at. It's like he's trying to say that the reason that
Myles Garrett
is getting it so bad is just because he's so ginormous, but he's ignoring the part where he removed a man's helmet and then beat him over the head with it.
Yeah.
That's the tidbit that Tim is leaving out.
So quickly, DeAndre Hunter threw a great – not DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Jordan threw a great first pitch.
He's vegan.
Great
first
pitch. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Let me give it to you here.
Right-handed, left-handed.
This is right-handed.
Wearing an Angels jersey.
So this is a couple years ago. Look at that.
Is aggressive.
Okay, I mean,
he lollipopped that sucker.
It was catchable.
By basketball standards, he threw a strike.
And that's kind of my point.
It crossed at the helmet and landed at the knees.
Look at these comparing some of the other ones. As this video goes on, it doesn't look good.
In the final hour, we'll give you our Skins Jets picks, caps tonight, and what we are watching the Redskins to see on Sunday. But next, this will be fun. Make sure you're listening. Sean Doolittle has a lot of takes on the Astros using video to steal signs. You want to hear that on the Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.